your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got some really good clips today. There's that shooting down in New Zealand. We're going to cover that. We're going to cover certain assertions that were made that will, cast light on new gun control laws probably coming out of New Zealand, Australia. But first, I want you to listen to Judicial Watch, Tom Fenton. He gives some really good overall summations of different issues this week. But thank you for listening, and here we go with Tom Fenton, Judicial Watch.
Hi, everyone. Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton here with our weekly update here on social media. Thanks, as always, for joining us. There is a lot to talk about. We have the Lisa Page, Peter Strzok testimony finally being released. We have new lawsuits that we filed for information on a deep state conspiracy or coup against President Trump. A great new court ruling about FBI cover-ups, pushing back on the FBI cover-up of this deep state conspiracy. And then, of course, the Hillary Clinton email scandal continues, and Judicial Watch has begun taking testimony of Clinton email witnesses. But first up, I think I'll talk about the news that is the result of a release of information or testimony by the minority leader of the House Republican portion of the Judiciary Committee. So the Judiciary Committee is now run, obviously, by the Democrats on the House side. And Congressman Collins is the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee. And he's begun releasing testimony of the various witnesses who have testified to the House over the last year or so about the deep state conspiracy against President Trump. Congressman Collins, who, frankly, I've never heard of before until he became a ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, has taken some important steps in bringing transparency to what Congress has been doing. Because what had happened is they had taken this testimony of people like Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Orr, Christopher Steele, I think, Glenn Simpson, people like that. But it hasn't been released to the public. Because what has happened is that the Republicans last year sent it over to the Justice Department just in case there was classified information in there that the Justice Department or the FBI wanted to hold back. And it turns out they just sat on it. The Justice Department and the FBI hasn't authorized the release of any of it, even though it's pretty clear much of the testimony doesn't concern classified matters. In fact, the testimony was geared to avoid discussion of classified matters. So the Republican minority has had enough, and they started releasing the documents. They're not waiting for the Justice Department because they're obviously in cover-up mode, as they've been throughout the entire Trump presidency when it comes to protecting the deep state conspiracy against President Trump. So last week he released Bruce Orr's testimony, and this week he released Lisa Page's and Peter Strzok's testimony. And I have here, this is what Lisa Page's testimony looks like. And what it does, the testimony, is confirmation of this illicit, illegal effort to destroy President Trump. So this testimony here is, in my view, evidence of a crime. It's evidence of a crime, and who's the victim of the crime? President Trump. Because you had people like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page who evidently, by their own admission, couldn't stand President Trump, opposed his candidacy, sending text messages back and forth about we hope that Trump loses, he can't win, will he win? No, we'll stop him from winning, Peter Strzok wrote. He has an insurance policy in case he ran, and the mission is in this testimony that the insurance policy indeed was the Russia investigation. Lisa Page testified, for instance, that Peter Strzok saw impeachment as a career goal if he were to stay involved in the Trump-Russia investigation. And also there's admissions that they had nothing, absolutely nothing, to justify going after President Trump or then-candidate Trump with this spy operation. Now, they had tips, but certainly nothing substantial enough to conclude that Mr. Trump or his campaign was colluding with the Russians. It's pretty clear that's in the testimony. So this testimony confirms that the text messages that were anti-Trump text messages between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, who you may recall were also having an affair at the time, meant what they said. They were anti-Trump, and they were meant to be anti-Trump. Now, what is their defense? Their defense is, well, just because we personally didn't think much of President Trump doesn't mean we abused our position to target him illicitly. Now, do you buy that? Because I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. And it just strikes me that how outrageous it is that despite all this evidence that the Justice Department has allowed this investigation, tainted by this misconduct by people like Strzok and Page, have allowed that investigation into President Trump to continue. Because remember, Strzok and Page went into and were key players in the Mueller investigation. And only after these text messages came out as a result of an inspector general investigation did Mueller bring Strzok in, according to Strzok's testimony that was released, and tell him he had to go. Now, of course, Mr. Mueller didn't ask Mr. Strzok, according to Strzok's own testimony, well, did you do anything inappropriate as a result of your bias against President Trump? He was never asked the question by Mueller. And isn't that interesting? So you have this evidence of bias by top FBI officials involved not only in the anti-Trump Russia investigation, but remember, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were also running the Clinton email non-investigation. And Mueller's investigation was just allowed to proceed as if nothing happened. And if the Justice Department was being honestly run, there's a train coming by, as you can hear, they would have shut the Mueller investigation down due to the prosecutorial misconduct related to the FBI agents that had it in for President Trump. Because, and it explains a lot. Of course, we knew these text messages were out there, so there's really no way around them. So to read the testimony, you see they try to defend the indefensible. But it explains why it is that this Trump investigation was allowed to proceed despite having no evidence, despite it being tainted by this dossier that was the result of a Clinton DNC paid opposition research effort, despite Christopher Steele breaking the rules of the FBI and being fired as an informant, despite Christopher Steele improperly communicating with Bruce Orr improperly communicating with Christopher Steele, whose wife was a colleague of Christopher Steele, worked for Fusion GPS, Nellie Orr. So why, given all of that corruption, why the Mueller investigation was allowed to proceed? I don't understand it. And it's explainable because of the act, you had an anti-Trump agenda there, because there was nothing to require. There was nothing behind the. We're going to have to shut this phone down. That's ringing now. Because there was not. This is the joys of doing a live update for you all. These distractions become distracting. There is nothing behind the. There was nothing of substance behind the investigation. And how is that explained? How is it explained that it was allowed to go forward? Anti-Trump bias. So to sum up, forgive me for getting distracted by the phone, we now know why this anti-Trump investigation was allowed to proceed despite having no evidence and despite all the corruption behind its formation. Anti-Trump bias. Because if it were anything else, anyone else being targeted, any other type of investigation that was being run on the up and up, it would have been shut down. And this is why the Mueller operation needs to be shut down. And as I said before, and it looks like the president has tweeted this as well, there should be no Mueller report. So we're going to allow Robert Mueller and his partisans that he's hired, Andrew Weissman, the number two, who evidently is leaving. The Judicial Watch uncovered was an anti-Trumper who wrote an email to Sally Yates, the holdover Obama official who tried to thwart President Trump's travel ban. He was all in support of that lawless act. And he also went to Hillary Clinton's election night party. So these folks are going to be allowed to write a, quote, a report on President Trump on top of everything that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page was doing? So this testimony confirms the corruption behind the Mueller investigation. That's ongoing. So it isn't like it's in the past. It's ongoing. Now, on top of that, you have the testimony confirming that the Clinton email investigation was a sham, was corrupt, and was wired from the beginning. In the sense the Justice Department, and this has been implied in Comey's testimony previously, so a lot of this we have elements we know about, but the testimony, you know, puts it in black and white quite literally when you read it. That the Justice Department under President Obama and Loretta Lynch had zero interest in prosecuting Hillary Clinton, and they let the FBI know that. So that's why the FBI investigation was a sham, because they knew it was going to go nowhere. So sure, give immunity to everyone. Sure, ignore the fact that documents were destroyed. Sure, ignore the fact that there are people who committed perjury. They were just going through the motions, because it's confirmed the Justice Department told the FBI, and Lisa Page testified to this, that they were not going to allow a prosecution under the Espionage Act. And of course, the other problem, the Espionage Act, which you can go to jail for mishandling classified information, either intentionally or if you do it as a result of gross negligence. Now, they rewrote the law to pretend that gross negligence was not something you could be prosecuted over, even though they do prosecute people over gross negligent handling of classified information. So the Justice Department rewrote the law to allow Hillary Clinton to get away with doing that, it looks like. And, of course, she had the intent. But on top of that, the investigation was crimped, because why was that the only aspect of the email matter, as I like to say, investigated? She took documents she didn't have a right to take. She did destroy government records she didn't have a right to destroy. The technical term is alienation of records, stealing records. And on top of that, it's the Clinton Foundation connection that they didn't want to look at as well. Peter Strzok confirmed that they had a deal with the Clinton lawyers that they could look at the Clinton Foundation server, because the server Hillary Clinton's email server was on, her secret system was on, was shared by others, including the Clinton Foundation. And so they told the Justice Department and the FBI, well, they could look at the emails, but they couldn't look at Clinton Foundation material. So they agreed not to do that. Can you imagine Paul Manafort making that demand of the FBI? But it was Hillary Clinton, and as one of the text messages said, they thought she was going to be the next president, so they were treading carefully. So not only was Hillary Clinton protected for her email misconduct, the Clinton Foundation and the pay-to-play that Judicial Watch uncovered, not the Justice Department, not Congress, but Judicial Watch uncovered through our lawsuits, showing that Clinton Foundation officials were, on behalf of donors and allies of the foundation, getting favors from the State Department under Hillary Clinton. None of that was touched by the Justice Department and the FBI. Now, I know others have said since then the foundation's being investigated. I don't see any evidence of that. It'd be a pleasant surprise if it were the case. But we all know what the indicia of a real investigation is. First of all, you hear the Clintons screaming about it, but you'd see grand juries, you hear witnesses being questioned, or they'd be complaining about being questioned. You'd know something serious was going on. And the question I have for Attorney General Barr is that we've got a demonstrated record that the Justice Department, under the prior administration, and frankly through this administration, has given Hillary Clinton a pass by ignoring the rule of law, by doing her favors, while at the same time illicitly targeting President Trump. What is the Attorney General going to do about it? Is he going to reopen the Clinton email issue? Is he going to allow the FBI and Justice Department finally to take a serious look at the Clinton Foundation? Is he going to shut down the Mueller operation? Is he going to prevent an abusive report from being written? That is the question for Attorney General Barr. Not, well, is he going to be transparent with the report? There should be no report. To me, that would be just another victimization of President Trump. As I said, he's a crime victim. And it's about time our law enforcement started treating him as such, as opposed to abusing him because they don't like him.
These continued accusations about Hillary Clinton are building, and possibly our new Attorney General will bring some kind of charges, but we're not sure about that this time. Here's a good clip coming out of Fox News Network, and it's hard-hitting, so listen carefully to this.
All right, so the new leader, well, really the real speaker in Congress, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is not resonating well with a lot of voters. We have a new Gallup poll that is showing that although she is well-known now throughout the nation, Ocasio-Cortez is polling, well, fairly negatively. Now, maybe it could be because of her radical policies. I kind of think so. And also tonight, Ocasio-Cortez is saying it isn't easy having to work all the time. It's so hard. 30 years in radio, 23 years at Fox, 10 years in construction, 10 years in restaurants. I'm sorry she's working so hard. And take a look.
The thing they don't tell you about working in Congress is that if you do what you're supposed to do, you're working all the time, which means that you have no time to, like, set up your life. So I spent weeks sleeping on an air mattress, and I don't own a chair.
All right, following the whirlwind of backlash against the Congresswoman, in this case, Omar's anti-Semitic statements, fellow freshman progressive Congresswoman Tlaib, well, she's now being criticized for reportedly supporting an effort to end college's study board program with Israel. Wow. We reached out to Congresswoman Tlaib's office for comment, but she's not getting back to us. Here with Reaction Tonight, Fox News contributor, we have former Congressman Jason Chaffetz. And also joining us is National Press Secretary for the Trump 2020 campaign, Kayleigh McEnany. Congressman, we start with you tonight. Good to see you both. Your reaction, not only to this, also to the news steals, what now we see in Steele's testimony and what we learned in Orr's testimony and Page's testimony and Strzok's testimony and McCain's aide testimony. This is now beginning to crumble.
Look, the fix was in from the beginning. I was the chairman of the Oversight Committee. We were trying to dig deep into this. We were stonewalled. We were obstructed. They kept telling us, don't worry about it. Then James Comey, once he made this announcement, came and testified before Congress. You go line by that. I'm telling you, there are things that he said under oath that are flat-out lies that have been discredited. Mr. Comey should be held accountable for this. He should be prosecuted for what he did.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. He signed off on the FISA, verifying the dossier is true. McCabe, no dossier, no FISA. Then he's telling Trump it's unverified a few months later. Did he lie to the FISA judges?
Yes, he did lie to the FISA judges, and he also lied to the Oversight Committee under oath when he came and told us, oh, it was unanimous. It was unanimous that we didn't want to charge her. Meanwhile, we come to find out it was really
James
somebody
Baker
pulling the strings at the Department of Justice. And this is where Congress needs to hold them accountable. And the people have to keep demanding that they get to the bottom of this.
Now that we know Loretta Lynch was up to her eyeballs in rigging this, what should now happen to her?
Look, I do believe there should be either a special prosecutor put in place to look at the malfeasance that was happening within the Department of Justice and within the FBI. I've been calling for that for months. If you can warrant to go after Donald Trump, then you look at what's going on in the senior most echelon at the Department of Justice, and that far exceeds anything that was even an allegation in the Trump situation.
Kaylee.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the fix was in from the get-go. We learned from Lisa Page this week that, in fact, there was an insurance policy against President Trump. We learned that from Peter Strzok's text, again, verified by Lisa Page's testimony there. And this is striking, Sean. I mean, this is corruption at the highest order. We have to stand against it. And you compare that to the way Hillary Clinton's been treated. It's outrageous. This has been a witch hunt from the beginning. And I would finally add, Andrew Weissman also stepping down from the special counsel this week. Why was this guy there to begin with, who cost 20,000 people their jobs and was unanimously rebuked by the Supreme Court?
Congressman, where is Horowitz? Where's Huber? He's in your home state. What are these guys doing? Why is this taking so long?
So Horowitz is the inspector general for the Department of Justice. He's been working on this for nearly a year. I have some belief that it'll take another month or two. They buried him in more than a million types of documents. But ultimately, I think he will be the key authority on this. He has looked at it and seen it much further and wider than anybody else. Unfortunately, it's never fast enough, Sean. It's never, ever fast enough. Huber, who's the U.S. attorney in Utah that was appointed by Sessions to overlook some of this stuff, I have absolutely no idea what he's doing. I haven't heard word one. And most concerning is that the witnesses that were put forward by Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan and encouraged them to talk, they've never even been interviewed. So we can tell that he's making no progress.
Are you confident, and I'll ask Kaylee first. I'll ask the same question. Are you confident, Kaylee, I think the dam now is broken? Now that it's all, and we're going to get the Pfizer applications, and we're going to get the Gang 8 info, and we're going to get the 302s, we're going to get the five buckets that John Solomon always talks about.
Absolutely. We're going to get all of that, Sean. I'm confident that America is waking up to this. You've been on this from the very beginning on your show. The Mueller report's about to come out. We're going to find no collusion, no wrongdoing on the part of the president, zero probable cause to open an investigation into the president after millions of pages of documents reviewed. And you were right all along. We should have been looking at the FBI and the DOJ under Obama.
Do you believe in your heart, Congressman, with all we now know and all this, we're now going to have a cascade of new information in the days and weeks ahead, that those people that tried, that first rigged the investigation into Hillary, tried to fix a presidential campaign in this country and rig the outcome and tried to bludgeon the winner and undo that election with known lies? They were warned in August of 2016. Will they be held accountable?
I would like to tell you yes, Sean. In my heart of heart, I don't believe so. But I think the American people figured it out.
Wow.
And that's why Hillary Clinton is not the president of the United States.
But, so the people that rigged it, we now know they rigged the investigation. They're going to get away with that.
I wish I could tell you yes. If it was up to you and me and John Ratcliffe and Trey Gowdy and other Jim Jordan,
well,
yes, they would
well,
be
then
in
we
jail.
Might as well
but that's not the way it's going to work. These
well
people are going to walk.
And we might as well shred the Constitution then.
There's
no equal justice or application of our laws.
I agree with you. It drives me nuts. That's why I'm on this network night after night talking about it. That's why I was in Congress pounding my fist demanding
done a great
it.
Job.
And I got to tell you, they have got to prosecute these people.
Well, we'll see. I am hearing that more is happening than we know. I hope my source is right. So far, we haven't been wrong.
So, you know, we don't have any prosecutions yet on many of these accusations on Hillary and others. So we're just going to have to wait and see what Barr does come up with. But they're convening different grand juries for different issues, so it remains to be seen. Secretary Pompeo coming up next for some very, very good insights and issues he's discussing that are current. So here we go, Secretary Pompeo.
So, Mr. Secretary, great to see you.
Brian, it's great to be with you.
There's like four stories that happened on my way here to Washington to interview you, one of which was a testimony this morning in front of a Senate committee where the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dunford, made it clear that indirectly Google is helping the Chinese military with their technology. This is the same Google that said no to a Pentagon contract back in 2018. And they testified to it today. much to the amazement of many on Capitol Hill. What's your reaction to that?
So I don't have much to add. I know what Chairman Dumpert said this morning. He's got it exactly right for sure. But I'll speak to this more broadly. We need global companies to come to the realization of the threat that China presents. Certainly American companies need to recognize that too. And when they're working here in the United States, they certainly need to treat the United States at least as good as they treat the Chinese companies with which they interact. And I think that's what Chairman Dumpert was getting to this morning.
And I think also, keeping on the China topic, yesterday you went out of your way to point out that their human rights record is terrible. You said they're in a class of their own.
Yeah, league of their own, yes.
Where they treat the Muslims, the Uyghurs, and everyone in their midst. And they responded saying the U.S. should worry basically about their own human rights record.
So I hadn't seen that response, but it's both unfortunate and pretty typical of the way they treat their fellow human beings there. This is one of the worst human rights countries that we've seen since the 1930s. The magnitude and the scale of this is truly of a global proportion. Whether it's the Uyghurs that are in one part of the country or Christians or other religions in other parts of the country, they don't honor that religious diversity, the religious freedom. And I must say, I'm incredibly proud of how we do and how we treat human beings here in the United States. We make mistakes. We're imperfect. But there's no nation in the history of civilization that has had the human rights record that we have here today. We should be very proud of it. The Trump administration has continued in that tradition.
There's also a report coming here today that it looks like the president and President Xi, if they are to meet at Mar-a-Lago, it's not going to happen until at the earliest mid-April. What could you tell us? I know trade is not your area, but you're very familiar with the magnitude of this event and what it could mean for overall these two superpowers to meet. What's going on here?
So real progress has been made. I think that's absolutely true. I think both leaders want to make sure that we've had enough progress so that the two seniors, President Xi and President Trump, can get together and close out any of the remaining items. I think they should do that. I think they should do it at a time when they're both comfortable that they can get there. But I've watched these trade talks progress. There's real progress that's been made, and I'm hopeful, whether it's the beginning of April, the middle of April, or if it even takes a couple of weeks longer, we ought to get this right. These trade relationships matter. It's why President Trump took them on, and I'm very hopeful that the two leaders can come together to get a trade deal that will benefit not only America, but the rest of the world as well.
Mr. Secretary, some have speculated, and where I'm on the outside, that seeing you and the president walk away in Hanoi made them worry that they could come all the way out to Florida or Washington and walk away with nothing, which would be an embarrassment to the Chinese.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not.
What do you think?
I can tell you from the experience in Hanoi, the president was doing the right thing for the American people. He had America's security, Americans' interest, at the core of his decision-making process. And so when a deal was presented that didn't make sense for America, or frankly for our South Korean and Japanese partners, he walked away from it. He made the decision not to take that deal. I'm sure the rest of the world observed that and recognizes the seriousness with which President Trump takes protecting Americans.
Because of the time change, we were on live. And next thing you know, you're on stage and it's early. And the itinerary is blown up. And I'm watching you on stage. You do a great job keeping a poker face. But as the president spoke and talked about the deal you weren't going to have, do you feel personally that you let him down?
I don't. I think we made real progress, even in Hanoi, even a place where we didn't reach the final resolution of what we've been asking for all along. We didn't get an agreement for the full and final denuclearization in a verified way. But I think we've made progress. In the weeks in the run-up, we learned a lot about the North Koreans' position. In the days afterwards, I think we've learned a little bit more still. This is a long process. The president's always said if we can keep missiles from flying and keep nuclear tests from happening, that's a good first start. We know what the final objective is.
And do you feel as though riding back on that plane, did you say to yourself, what is everyone going to say about this?
I don't spend a lot of time worrying about what others say. They'll critique. They'll have their own views. I'm confident that President Trump and our administration got this one right.
Middlebury Institute has gotten everybody's attention, featured on various shows, for what they've been able to reveal from satellite photos about the development of rockets and what the North Koreans were doing and not doing. And according to Jeff Lewis, they had indications even before Hanoi that they were beginning to rebuild some launching sites and testing engine sites. If that is indeed true, did that play into the fact that you felt as though perhaps the North Koreans weren't serious about a deal and were playing delay of game? Did you have that same information?
Well, Brian, I don't want to talk about the intelligence that we had, but I think the American people know We knew precisely what was going on inside of North Korea, not just at those sites you've referred to, but other places as well. We know what's been happening. We saw the UN report talking about the fact that there are violations of the UN Security Council resolutions taking place. We went in there with full knowledge and eyes wide open. The president's decision, though, to take the offer, which was one part of their nuclear effort, the facility Yongbyon, which would have left missiles and warheads and other elements where they could still enrich uranium, all of those things were still going to be there. And in exchange for that, they asked for the near total elimination of all the sanctions. That just wasn't something that made much sense, and the president communicated that.
And the fact is, since that time, there's more indications they're about to set up a rocket. If something like that happens, what would that do to relations? What other arrow do you have in your quiver to send a message that would maybe bring us back to where you were when you took over?
Boy, I think we're in a better place than when we took over, so I don't frankly want to go back to where we were.
But what if the rockets go off? What if a missile goes over Japan again?
I don't want to forecast what we will do or what we might not do in the event that that happened. That would be most unfortunate. I think Chairman Kim understands that. He told President Trump in Hanoi that he wouldn't go back to that. He wouldn't go back to firing rockets and missiles or conducting nuclear tests. We hope he'll stay to his word.
We also know that the Russians are cheating. This video of them offloading cargo to a North Korean ship. So they're breaking the sanctions. How can you get the message across to the North Koreans if the Chinese and Russians are ignoring the sanctions to a degree?
Yeah. So there are absolutely sanctions violations, and we are absolutely determined to stop as many of them as we can.
Have you expressed it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. No, the Chinese know this. The Russians know this. We've shared the things we know about the violations. I will say this. We have the best sanctions enforcement, even the Chinese and the Russians, that we've had at any time in the history of this problem set. It's been a global effort. These UN Security Council resolutions were voted on by every country. So while we're not perfect and these sanctions aren't being perfectly enforced, we're in pretty good shape and we're going to redouble our efforts.
All I have to do is go on social media and I show your message to the Venezuelan people and basically saying, hey, I got your back. I understand what you're going through and be patient. How much more garbage do they have to eat before America gets more directly involved?
I'm pausing only because when I think about how bad it is today and what I know it's going to be like tomorrow and the day after that, it's going to get worse. The Maduro regime is truly evil, denying food to the hungry, denying medicine to the sick. We've delivered. The American people have been so generous, 200 metric tons of food on their borders they won't let in. We are continuing to take efforts. We had our team land back in the United States just a few hours ago to get them safely out of Venezuela. We're committed to this effort. I don't want to forecast what the president may do, but he's been very clear that we're considering every tool in the American arsenal to achieve victory for Venezuelan democracy and to get Maduro to leave.
Have we put troops into Colombia ready to act should they need to act?
It's a fine question, and I'll let the Department of Defense talk about their movements of their soldiers.
So you're passing
on
the question.
I am, yes.
In Afghanistan, right now, we understand there's a draft agreement on two key issues, withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan and the Taliban's pledge to cut ties with these terror groups, Al Qaeda. Can you confirm that?
I can't. There's no deal at this point. We don't have final resolution there. But we are working towards a political reconciliation. We've been hard at it. Ambassador Khalilzad's been on the ground in Doha for 6 or 8 days back, I think, yesterday. We've made some progress both with the Afghan government and with the Taliban. We now need them to talk to each other. President's made clear his objective here. He wants to end this endless war, but he wants to do it in a way that we don't increase risk to the United States from terror acts coming from Afghanistan. I believe we can achieve both of those goals.
Mr. Secretary, he made it clear he wants to get out. Didn't he hurt the ambassador in trying to get a peace agreement, knowing the objective is to get out?
We've made more progress since that story leaked than we have made in the 9 years prior in getting towards reconciliation.
Is it true that members of the Taliban Five that we let out of Gitmo, not you, but the previous administration let out of Gitmo, that they are part of these peace talks right now, the ones that we exchanged for Bo Bergdahl, many of which described the worst of the worst, many of which described your relationship with both bin Laden and Mullah Omar. Is that true?
I don't want to answer who's been showing up there. I will say this.
Is that acceptable if they are?
I'll say this. We've negotiated with some really bad people. I was in Hanoi talking to a regime that has caused enormous harm to its own people. State Department doesn't often get to choose exactly who it is. We're trying to achieve good security outcomes for the American people. sometimes we end up talking to some really bad folks.
And they would be okay to stay in that room with, as far as you're concerned?
If we can deliver security for the American people, we'll talk to just about anyone.
But the Taliban have captured an entire Afghan force company of 50. They killed 70 the week before. Are we dealing from weakness?
I don't believe that at all, and neither do the leaders on the ground, including General Miller, who's commanding resolute support. I believe we're not dealing from weakness. We're not naive. We know precisely who it is we're sitting across the table from, whether that's in Korea or Iran or in Afghanistan. We know who these people are, and we're picking points where America can be more secure.
And Mr. Secretary, you're a West Point guy. You're a military guy with CIA experience
as far as
Congress. But you have that military training that 99% of the country doesn't have, and you served. You know that Pakistan's the problem. You know they're training, arming, and equipping. And without them, the Taliban are vapor. How much longer are we going to put up with this?
Well, we've taken actions against Pakistan that no other administration has taken. I do see this. I see this from, I've had friends killed. You have too, I'm sure. Lots of New Yorkers were killed when those towers came down. I've not forgotten the lesson from 9/11. We need Pakistan to do more. They have to stop harboring these terrorists. We saw what happened with India, the conflict that rose there as a result of terrorists that departed from Pakistan. We need the Pakistanis to step up. They need to stop harboring terrorists.
You told, going back to China for a second, you told the Poles, you told the Germans, do not do a deal with Huawei. It's about 5G. It's about security. It looks like they're going through it anyway. What would happen if both of our allies decide to go with a Chinese company to lead the way on 5G? And can you tell the American people why that matters so much?
I certainly can. Huawei and Chinese telecommunications equipment in one's network, in a nation's network, presents a real risk that the Chinese government will have access to data that no American wants them to have. And so when you talk about this happening in countries like Poland or Germany or the UK, we're very concerned about that. Not only for American national security, because we have information stored there too, but for the security of their own peoples. We have urged these countries to reconsider those policies. We view this technology as being threatening to their security, and we've told them. Right. If you put this technology in your equipment, it will make it incredibly difficult for the United States to work alongside you in some of these places.
Mr. Secretary, they're not listening because Angela Merkel says we'll handle our own intelligence, thank you, and they still have that natural gas pipeline coming from Vladimir Putin into their country. The president told them it's not a good idea. You've told them it's not a good idea. Why are our allies ignoring us?
So there's more work to do. We've made progress on lots of fronts. We've had some places where we still have work to do, Brian. I agree with you. I wish Nord Stream 2 was something that the Germans would understand. Presented risk to the German people. While they're asking America to support them, they're handing resources and money to the Russians. They ought not to build it. We're using American power every place we can to push back against these challenges.
Everyone's talking about global warming and the threat to this country. When you look at the top five threats to this nation, where do you rank global warming or climate change?
Yeah, I wouldn't put it in the top five.
Why?
Because I can count to five that get you to things that present more risk to the people I used to represent in Kansas and citizens all across America, whether it's the threat that we've talked about today from China, the nuclear proliferation risk that extends from Pakistan through all those folks who have these weapon systems, places like North Korea where they can sell these weapons. Right. I think I'm at five already, but I could give you a whole list of threats that I think we can affect change on in a way that will really make a difference for the security of the American people.
Before I came in here, it became clear that Republicans have jumped ship and decided to not vote with a piece of legislation that does not go along with the president's need for emergency money at the border. You used to be in Congress. You also a Harvard law guy. So constitutionally, was the president out of bounds? Do you side with the 59 that voted against the president, or do you side with the 41 that voted with him?
Count me in the 41.
Why?
I've spent a lot of time with my Mexican counterparts. This challenge at our southern border is real. I believe it's a crisis, but call it what you will. The challenge of not knowing who's coming in and out of our country and what drugs or people or illicit materials might be coming across our southern border is real. We need to take serious action against it. And the president's executive order does just that.
Should you do more with the Guatemalan government, Jimmy Morales, who evidently has an affinity for the president for this country, to stem the tide? Most of these guys are coming from enemies.
That is right. These are mostly not Mexican citizens who are coming across today. They're coming out of the Northern Triangle countries from Honduras and from Guatemala. We're working hard. We're trying to both convince them they have to take this seriously, and help them develop the capacity to do so.
As I walked in here for the first time since 2014, if my stats are correct, the rockets came out of Gaza into Israel. What's your reaction to that?
I saw the reports as well. I've not been able to confirm them other than I had an initial report that said that there were two rockets, that they came out of Gaza, and that there weren't any injuries. The Israelis have the right to defend themselves. I'm confident that they will be able to do that. I regret that the folks in the Gaza Strip, probably Hamas, although I suppose we shouldn't speculate, fire these rockets and put Israelis at risk. Right. And this only presents increased risk of escalation, something that we hope doesn't happen, but you should know we will support the Israelis' right to defend themselves.
Do you worry how much the anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic language coming out, mostly the Democratic side in Congress, hurts long-term the Israeli-American relations?
I do. I worry about it for multiple reasons, not just the relationship between these two democracies, but I worry about it because it undermines what we began today, Brian, the protection of the dignity and rights and the religious freedom of every human being. And so when I hear anti-Semitic remarks, it saddens me, and I know it undermines what is the greatest about the United States of America.
So a story on you today that talked about why is the Secretary of State doing so much traveling in the country from Iowa to Texas to Kansas? Is he running for president? Is he running for Senate? Why? With all the problems we have, why are you traveling?
Brian, I've seen these stories. I suppose everybody gets unhappy when I don't go to Martha's Vineyard like my predecessors did. They traveled domestically, too. America's our first client, and I wanted to go out to Iowa to talk about China and trade and why it matters. I went to Texas this week to talk about energy and how American innovation and creativity have created enormous wealth for America and increased America's geostrategic capacity, because we now don't have to import as much energy. And I'm going back to Kansas next week to talk about entrepreneurship. I'm doing this on behalf of America. I'm very focused on what I'm doing here today.
Are you ruling out running for the Senate in Kansas?
I have. I've told folks I'm not going to do that.
Long term, would I be surprised in 2024 if you're running for president?
I don't know if you'd be, but my wife would be shocked.
But your classmates probably wouldn't. And lastly, I understand you're making a trip to the Middle East.
I am. Next week, I'll be headed off to the Middle East.
What's the objective? Where are you going?
So, threefold set of objectives. I'll be traveling to Kuwait. I'll be traveling to Lebanon. And I'll be traveling to Israel. On each of those places, a different mission set. But the common theme in each of those places is helping those countries bolster their efforts to push back against the Islamic Republic of Iran.
And that's going to be the focus. Iraq and Iran meeting, forging relationships. Iraq's ignoring the sanctions. And Grand Ayatollah Sistani sat down with the president of Iran. It seems like in terms of soft power and diplomatic power, we're getting our butts kicked over there. What's happening?
Yeah, I don't see it that way. America has been a strong supporter of Iraq. We still are working to take down ISIS in their country. I had a conversation with their prime minister just a couple days back. I think we're making progress on developing a strong, independent, sovereign Iraq, but there's no doubt Iran has its eyes set on taking control of that country. I don't think that's good for the Iraqi people. I know it's not good for the United States of America. And we're going to continue to do the CT fight there and stand up an Iraqi government that's free and less involved with what's going on in Iran.
There is a parliament member that says we don't have a diplomatic game right now in Iraq.
I disagree fundamentally. I know precisely what the diplomatic game is there. And if the Senate will confirm my ambassador, we'll step it up even more.
That would help. Last question. Your predecessor famously basically admitted that he called the president a moron. You have a much different relationship with him. What does he not get that you get?
You mean what would my predecessor not get?
Yeah, what you understand about the president?
I don't know. My relationship with the president is one that's an effort on my part to execute his vision for America's foreign policy. He's the commander-in-chief. He provides the direction. I go out every day and work my tail off to try and execute it and implement it for him. We talk just about every day, either in person or on the phone, so that I know what it is he's thinking, so that when I'm out talking with my foreign counterparts, the world knows I'm speaking a message that President Trump wants spoken.
How did he win you over? You were originally with somebody else. What was it about President Trump that you said I'm all in?
He won and was delivering on behalf of the American people an agenda that far outstripped any other opportunity. I was very proud to accept the offer to be his director of Central Intelligence, or the CIA director. I enjoyed my time there, and I'm enjoying being the Secretary of State as well.
And you're taking a vow not to sleep or relax for at least 4 years?
For a little while.
All right. Thanks so much,
Thank
Secretary.
You very much, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now speaking next would be Senator Graham from the floor of the Senate on a myriad a number of issues. So here we go with Senator Graham.
We were told that Mueller may be imminently fired. The president said some things that were at times disturbing about the investigation. So I was asked many times, let's make sure we protect Mueller and let him do his job. So I first introduced the Special Counsel Independence Protection Act on August the 3rd, 2017, with Republicans and Democrats. To my good friend from New York, I think Mueller is just about done. To all those who are worried about Mueller not being able to do his job, he has. He's about to tell us what he found. There's a regulation that determines what is disclosed and how it's disclosed. I have all the confidence that Mr. Barr will be as transparent as possible. That regulation is specific. You can look at it for yourself. And I'd like to know as much as possible and share it with the public. However, I've also been consistent, trying to find balance here. In February of 2018, I called for a special counsel to look at the abuses potentially by the Department of Justice and the FBI regarding the Clinton email investigation and the handling of the FISA warrant process against Mr. Carter Page, someone associated with the Trump campaign. So since 2018, I've asked a simple thing. If this stuff about Page and Strzok and Orr doesn't bother you, then that bothers me. Was there two systems of justice in 2016, one for the Democratic candidate and one for the Republican candidate, where the Republican candidate's campaign had a FISA warrant issued against somebody associated with it based on a document that was known to be unreliable, politically charged on four different occasions? That should bother every American. And rather than me telling you whether it happened or not, why don't we appoint a Mueller-like figure to look at how the Clinton email investigation ended up the way it did, what the tarmac meeting was all about between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton? I can just very quickly say to my colleagues, if the shoe were on the other foot, if the Republican Party had hired a foreign agent to go to Russia to investigate dirt on Hillary Clinton, gave it to the Justice Department, it was used on four separate occasions to get a warrant against somebody working with or associated with the Clinton campaign, all hell would pay. If a member of the Justice Department told the investigators, before you get the warrant, the person who is involved in collecting this information hates Clinton. If there were exchanges between an FBI agent and a Department of Justice lawyer talking about getting an insurance policy to make sure that Hillary Clinton's never elected, how much they hated Trump, it would be front page news all over the world. I don't know what happened between Trump and Russia, but we're about to find out, and we'll see if there's there, and we'll use a process to disclose it to the public. But I asked the Democratic leader to modify his request and allow my amendment, this to the desk, to make a simple change, and every Republican will be with me if you wondered about how Republicans vote in the House, that the attorney, that this resolution be modified, calling for the Attorney General to appoint a special counsel to investigate Department of Justice misconduct and the handling of the Clinton email investigation and the handling of the FISA warrant process as it relates to warrants obtained on Carter Page, and to publicly release the results of those investigations he agreed to consistent with law. So I would ask the resolution to be modified in accordance with this. I would just say to the following, that there are a lot of Americans, including Jim Jordan, that believe that what happened in 2016 with the Clinton email investigation and the FISA warrant against Carter Page showed corruption at the highest level of government. I agree that there's more than smoking guns here. There's overwhelming evidence that somebody outside the political system should look into. I can't find anybody much on the other side who seems to give a damn about that. Mueller, I get. Mueller's been allowed to do his job. You're going to find out what he found pretty soon, as much as we can, consistent with the law. But I'm not going to give up on the idea that we're just going to look at one problem of 2016. I've been talking to myself for the most part. Now I've got a form. I will introduce a resolution asking you to do a simple thing. Ask somebody outside of politics, a special counsel, to look into how in the world the system got so off track to use a document prepared by a foreign agent, paid for by the Democratic Party, collected in Russia, to obtain a warrant against American citizen that is garbage to this day. How in the world could the investigation get so off track that the two people in charge of it openly talked about making sure that there was an insurance policy against Trump if he won and openly espoused support for Clinton? How do you interview Clinton the way she was interviewed? Any American out there who did what Secretary Clinton did, you'd be in jail now. The question I want to know is, does anybody other than me believe that? I don't ask you to believe me. We let Mueller look at all things Trump related to collusion and otherwise. Somebody needs to look at what happened on the other side and find out if the FBI and the DOJ had two systems, one supporting the person they wanted to win and one out to get the person they wanted to lose. Some of these people have been fired for lying. And it's now time to have a special counsel look in all things.
We can't forget Lionel and his comments on this scandal about, this college scandal of getting your little kids into colleges that they don't deserve. So who would go with Lionel right now?
2019. This year is going to be and will go down in history as being the most cataclysmic, the most existential in terms of all that is happening. I cannot keep the storylines, what I'm hearing, what I cannot say, what I can say, and watching a convergence. I feel like these weather folks who say the conditions are perfect for a category 5 whatever. The conditions are perfect for a this. You start seeing things move. Let me just go through this in no particular order. Think of Eric Bren. Eric Bren was the fellow who spun the plates on Ed Sullivan. He spun millions of plates, it would seem like, at the same time. You have to go back and keep some going. We got a lot of plates going on at the same time. First plate. The college scandal, the college admissions scandal is so monumental. It is the bubonic plague, the Black Death, the worst thing that has ever happened, not just to legacy Ivy League campus enrollment and college inequity. No. This is going to rip the scab, the lid off of not only college admissions, but the people who make up one of the biggest organized crime cons ever. You see, in the old days, there was this thing, and I mentioned it before, there were two different words, and I love the way folks euphemize it. It was called institutional advancement and transactional philanthropy. Two wonderful euphemisms for, basically, bribery. I mean, bribing. I don't know the other way to say it. It's just bribing. It's just bribery. But that's when you would give money to an institution and they would let your kid in. Maybe for, to build an auditorium or whatever it was, or to endow a chair or whatever. Okay, that was bad. But it was the kid, and it was kind of understood, and it was not right, and of course that's going to really, really be affected. But it was that kid. It didn't seem criminal. It was almost like you knew it, We nodded to it. But now we have kids, and this is the part, who are not even taking the test, not even the kids in the extracurriculars who were in the application, not whose faces were superimposed on pole vaulters who allegedly, kids who never were on a water polo team in high school, kids who never took the SAT, kids whose charity was basically created overnight by these rich parents, a fraud. My favorite, I don't know why, is some of these tests, which, and it's not just getting into colleges, but in certain, standardized tests around the world, they take the test is first issued in China, and then 12 hours later, it comes here, and people will take pictures from compromised proctors. I mean, so the level, this is something that, if there was more money, the mob would be in it. But this is just absolute thievery, the likes of which, okay, that's over there. Next, we're getting Morris D's out at SPLC. It's more than just that. And we're still, as I tell you this, they're suggesting there was allegations of, well, I don't want to tell you what I'm hearing, but it will surprise you if what I'm hearing turns out to be true. But it also blends into and morphs into this attack that is involved in, and this is important, involved in the, how do I say this? The attack that, of all people, Tucker Carlson has advanced against Media Matters and these type of watchdogs. And a lot of folks, even today, others are now calling for this. For the first time, I know you and I are aware of this, and this may be like, well, where have they been? But it doesn't matter. Better late than never. People are saying, wait a minute, why is not Media Matters for America and that's a Podesta thing. That's more of a think tank. But anyway, why aren't SPLC and others focusing on non-conservative movements as well? I know, too late, but that's happening. Then we have people being bounced at Facebook. Then we're having a bloodbath at Goldman Sachs. Then we're having, I got to throw this one at you. I got more. The news is coming at me left and right. I can't even keep straight. You've got Lori Loughlin, who's claiming that her daughter, the liar, the little rat, the little sniveling spoiled brat, with her, I never wanted to go to college in the first place. The influencer at USC, she's been kicked out. Well, she says she left. Why? Are you ready for this? Wait for it. Are you sitting down? Put your drink down. You're not drinking milk, are you, or anything? Because it's going to come right through your nose when you hear this. They're claiming the reason for this is because she's being bullied. She's being bullied. Why? Because she's a thief. Now, we then have class action lawsuits. Are you following these plates? Class action lawsuits and a new cause of action, which I like. Well, not really new, but that says that the worth of the degree has been significantly minimized, diminished, affected by virtue of the scandals, lawsuits against the schools for not maintaining the integrity, also kids who didn't get in. Okay, then we have, and I'm throwing this at you, and this means only something to people from this area. Means nothing, but I got to tell you something. Sometimes the cojones that people have saying something, chutzpah, C.O. Jones, as he was saying in West Tampa, Cory Booker has announced that he and Rosario Dawson are a thing and that she is his boo. I got that right, honey? His boo. His Cory calls her his boo. Boo. All right.